be or not to be? That is the question.
Where was God? Isn't God supposed to be good? Isn't he supposed to love us? And does God want us to suffer?
10 years, you're not finished yet? Morty! Why did you do this to me?
Who are you?
Bruce? I'm God.
Bingo! Yahtzee! Is that your final answer? Our survey says God! Bing, 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 bing! Well, it was nice to meet you, God. Thank you for the Grand Canyon, and good luck with the apocalypse.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Dennis Prager Show, and the third hour on Tuesdays is titled The Ultimate Issues Hour, because we talk about ultimate issues. My argument is very simple, and I will be brief because I have a very rare guest on the Ultimate Issues Hour. And that is that we stop thinking about ultimate issues at too early an age because we get so involved with family matters, financial matters, personal matters, occupational matters, children matters, and then we don't talk about the ultimate matters. Here is the question: are science and religion in conflict? There is a major and important new book out on this titled The Great Partnership: Science, Religion, and the Search for Meaning. And the author is the chief rabbi of Great Britain and the British Commonwealth, has been since 1991, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. Rabbi Sacks, it is great to have you back on my show.
Wonderful to be with you, Dennis. A real privilege.
Well, it's very kind of you. Sir, this is a very important book. When did the conflict begin? Because to many of us, there shouldn't be any.
Exactly so, Dennis. You know, in Judaism, we see science and religion as friends, not enemies. And 2,000 years ago, the rabbis already coined a blessing to be said on seeing a distinguished scientist. So we love science, and we're very open to its findings. I think there was a moment of crisis in the 19th century when Charles Darwin published, you know, The Origin of Species. And that kind of rippled and echoed through the late Victorian era. But the new conflict arose, as you know, with the new atheist Sam Harris, the late Christopher Hitchens, Daniel Dennett, and our own British Richard Dawkins. And that emerged, I think, about 7 years ago. It began then.
Right. And the reason?
I guess it was a kind of delayed reaction to 9/11 and the realization that religion can take very extreme and very dangerous forms. That's my guess. I can't be sure.
Right. But even before then, I think that even when I was in graduate school, it was taken for granted, I think, in the academy that there was something amiss or awry with a person who believed in God, believed in the Bible, and claimed to also believe in science.
100%. When I studied philosophy at Cambridge and Oxford, all the philosophers were atheists, so I was a real oddball, actually. I think it's a major wrong direction in Western civilization, because there's no, in principle, there should be no conflict between the two whatsoever, and that's what I try to show in the new book.
Which you do indeed. Again, the book is The Great Partnership. It is up at DennisPrager.com. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Chief Rabbi of the United Kingdom. I want you to react to this. One of the leading Republican senators in the United States, Marco Rubio of Florida, was asked in Gentleman's Quarterly, of all places, out of nowhere in an interview with him, and he is truly one of the bright stars on the American right, and he was asked, how old do you think the Earth is? And his answer, I read, I'm not a scientist, man. I can tell you what recorded history says. I can tell you what the Bible says. But I think that's a dispute amongst theologians, and I think it has nothing to do with the gross domestic product or economic growth of the United States, etc. So he says he's not a scientist. How would you answer the question as a faithful religious Jew and one who esteems science? How old do you think the Earth is?
Well, I'm going to give you my view, Dennis. I wouldn't say it's shared by all rabbis or all religious Jews, but my view is the universe is 13.7 billion years old. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Science has got it right. Now, how do we square that with Genesis, which talks about creation in 7 days and talks really about just under 6,000 years? I think the answer to that was given by Einstein. You know, when Einstein was a child, what fascinated him and what led to the theory of relativity was trying to imagine what it would be like riding on a beam of light, traveling at the speed of light. And if you did that, time wouldn't change at all. Time only changes if you're standing still. So you could be traveling on a beam of light, and for us the world might be 13.7 billion years old, but for the person on the beam of light, no time has actually occurred. So the real question is, how fast is God traveling? And the short answer is, we can't possibly know. So I think the scientists are right. The universe is very ancient. And that should, I think, fill us with awe, because it tells us that God is a lot more patient than we thought he was.
I would love you to address this even further, because I think that this is an unnecessary conflict for people who take the Bible as the Word of God, as more than a few of my listeners do. So what do you do with the 6 days?
Clearly, the Bible is telling us two things. Number one, that the universe has a basic mathematical structure. Creation takes place in 6 days. Now, Britain's greatest scientist, who's not religious at all, Lord Rees, previously Sir Martin Rees, president of the Royal Society, that was the society, the world's oldest scientific society, the society of which Newton was a member. He has a book called Just Six Numbers, which proves that the entire structure of the physical universe is determined by six mathematical constants. So Genesis 1 is telling us that reality has a mathematical structure, and we now know that is the case. Number two, Genesis 1 is telling us that God creates order. So when there's chaos, let's not blame God. It's us who creates chaos, not God. And thirdly, of course, the Bible in Genesis 1 seven times uses a very key word, the word tov, the Hebrew word tov, which means good. This is telling us that Genesis 1, the Bible in general, is about morality, not about science.
Well, I couldn't agree more, but I wanted someone versed both in science and who believes that there is such a thing as God's word. To say that, I think it's
very important that your listeners know that, for instance, Francis Collins, who was head of the project to decode the human genome, began that project as an atheist and ended it as a religious believer. So wondrous was the complex harmony of DNA that it convinced him there is a creator.
What arguments would you give to my atheist listeners?
Look, there is no conceivable explanation as to how the universe is so finely tuned for the emergence of life. No scientist has offered an explanation. It is improbable to the nth degree, and all scientists know this. So there are only two possible explanations. The first, taken by some atheist scientists, that ours is only one of an infinite number of parallel universes, and we just happen to live on the one that gave rise to life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the alternative is that the universe, which is full of intelligence, had an intelligent designer. Now, faced with a choice between postulating one creator or an infinite number of parallel universes, for neither of which we have decisive evidence, Occam's razor, which is a principle of logic, says choose the most economical hypothesis. So on the basis of logic alone, it makes sense to believe in one intelligent creator than in an infinity of unproven and unprovable parallel universes. I rest my case with that.
Well, I think it's powerful, as is DNA, as the Francis Collins issue that you raised. I mean, if you find information encoded, then obviously there must be someone or something that had the information-giving ability?
Absolutely everything about our universe bespeaks intelligence. Whether we can prove simply something like intelligent design or not, I don't know. But the more we discover about creation, and we're discovering it all the time, major discoveries have taken place in the last year.
Let's hear about them in a moment, Rabbi. I want to reintroduce the book, The Great Partnership, Science, Religion, and the Search for Meaning. If you know somebody who's conflicted, oh, science means if I take science seriously, I can't take God seriously, this is your book, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Chief Rabbi of the United Kingdom. I'm Dennis Prager. We return. Hello, my friends, and welcome back. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. The third hour each Tuesday is devoted to ultimate issues. This one is there a conflict between science and religion? And a man who is well-versed in both, who is the chief rabbi of the United Kingdom and the British Commonwealth, and who is as well-read a human being as I have ever had the privilege of knowing and meeting, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, has written this book, The Great Partnership, Science, Religion, and the Search for Meaning. You were talking about some discoveries recently made and when we had to take a break.
Very interesting, Dennis. I don't know if you remember that when the genome was decoded, they made this astonishing discovery that only 2% of it codes for protein. So they wrote off the other 98%. They called it junk DNA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I do
remember. Well, in the last month, as a result of one of the biggest collaborative scientific experiments ever undertaken, 1,600 experiments, 450 scientists, 34 different scientific institutions, they have finally discovered that the 98% isn't junk at all. It's absolutely essential for life. It constitutes a recipe for creating 4 million switches to switch on and off the genes in various combinations to help make human beings. So I said to Richard Dawkins, our greatest atheist, Richard, you would agree now that the 98% of DNA written off as junk turns out to be absolutely vital to life, wouldn't you? And he said, yes, of course, absolutely. So I said, Richard, you dismiss 98% of religion as junk. Might you not be wrong on that as well? And actually, he had no answer to that.
What? I know this is not a theme in your book, but what do you think animates these atheists? Doesn't everybody at least want to believe that there's meaning in life and that we were created and not just random chance?
I don't know. To be honest, I think it's always a complex issue of feeling threatened by the idea that we are accountable to somebody for what we do. Now, that's a very challenging thing. I mean, you know, you and I know that if we have faith, and I have total faith, we are not alone in this universe. The universe is not blind to our existence, deaf to our prayers, or indifferent to our fate. And the fact that God is with us is for us a great source of comfort, but for some people it's very threatening.
Yeah. So the science of the last, I don't know, decade or two, do you think that increasingly scientific discovery, as you said, I'm just pursuing that theme, is leading to conclusions that there is a God?
Well, they're certainly supporting some very traditional ideas of ours. The deepest idea at the heart of the Judeo-Christian heritage is that we have freedom. Now, science seems to conflict with human freedom because it gives causal explanations for everything. But now we know, for instance, so much more than we knew about the plasticity of the human brain, for instance. Or we're beginning to understand the result of epigenetic factors, not just genetic ones. In other words, what we do changes what our children become. It turns out that science is suddenly endorsing some very traditional ideas about human freedom and about our becoming what we choose to become. So I think the whole scientific paradigm is going to shift in a direction that's much more sympathetic to at least Judaism and the Jewish elements of Christianity.
Well, it would seem that way. I know my brother was a professor of medicine at Columbia University, said that when he was at medical school, that was the epiphany, or maybe theophany.
Yeah.
Looking at the cell in the microscope, the complexity of it, I always say, and tell me if this is a fair argument, if we found a computer on Neptune, wouldn't we assume someone had built it?
Absolutely so. And the more we see the intricacy of design in nature, the more I think we must inevitably conclude that there was a creator. I do think the 21st century is going to be ultimately a more religious one than the 20th century was.
Well, to say that from Europe,
Europe's a little behind things here, but you in America are at least leading the way. And you know where Christianity is growing fastest in the world
right now?
Yes,
Africa.
Pardon?
Africa.
No, China.
Ah, all right, Africa and China.
Now, here you have a place where Chairman Mao, 50 years ago, declared a religion-free zone, and there are more people worshipping in churches on Sunday in China than there are members of the Communist Party. Go figure.
Yes, maybe you need oppression to help religion evolve. So, with time coming to an end with our discussion, why did you write this book?
I wrote this book because I think we cannot do without religion. Without religion, we will lose the finest values that made Western civilization what it is. And they are three. Number one, freedom. Number two, human dignity. And number three, hope. All of those are religious ideas that are neither refuted by science nor provable by science. They are the great religious ideas that made Western civilization unique. And we can't afford to lose them. So keep strong in faith and do not for one moment believe that there's a conflict between science and the things we believe.
Well, beautifully said. I want to remember the three, as you put it, freedom, human dignity,
and hope.
And hope.
I think, speaking as a Jew, Dennis, I think I once said Judaism is the voice of hope in the conversation of humankind. And we must never lose that voice.
Well, it is certainly well articulated in your book, The Great Partnership. Rabbi Sacks, it's always a joy to have you on, and just keep writing for many years.
Great to be with you, Dennis. Be blessed. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Now I'll take your calls on this Ultimate Issues Hour. Do you think there's a conflict between science and religion? This is the ultimate issue of this Ultimate Issues Hour. I have never understood why there would be. Never. It is never for a moment struck me as anything but a construct of those who wish to deny God and use science as the weapon. Science does not lead to atheism. Atheists use science. There is a very big difference. I'll be happy to take your calls on this matter because it's unfair to science, let alone unfair to the religious argument. And I'll explain why freedom and human dignity and hope are all three dependent upon a religious worldview as well. When we come back, you're listening to the Ultimate Issues Hour on the Dennis Prager Show, 1-8-PRAGER-776-877-243-7776. It actually is a great gift. It's a wonderful, wonderful documentary film by a man who went from secular left because of this show. It's very touching. I'm obviously in it a lot, but it's far more than me, and it's very entertaining, Baseball Dennis and the French. Welcome back to the Ultimate Issues Hour. I just had the chief rabbi of the United Kingdom and British Commonwealth on, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who is an Orthodox rabbi. So he is certainly of traditional belief regarding the Bible. And he writes a book here about there being not only no conflict between science and religious faith, but that they are, as the title of his book puts it, The Great Partnership. And that's the name of his well-written and very, very, I want to say easily read, but that doesn't quite say it. He's written it in a reader-friendly manner. That's the best way I could put it. All right, let's go to some of your calls. But first, let me just tell you about the three things he said religion gives. That's very powerful. Freedom, human dignity, and hope. Let me explain each of them. And he's right. Science gives none of them. Okay? Freedom. If there is no God and we are just material beings, then we have no freedom because we are just sophisticated robots. Robots have no freedom, no free will. So it's amazing. I've talked about this all of my broadcast career, 30 years. You have to apposit God to believe that the human being has free will. And so more and more people don't believe we have free will. So it's up to you. You could decide. But I don't think you lead your life with the belief that there is no free will. I think people take that position in total contradistinction to how they behave and how they look at each day. Number two, human dignity. That's correct. You're either created in the image of God or you're a bunch of molecules. That's it. There's nothing in between. Nothing. That's why it's perfect. Read my column today about what's wrong with public nudity. That, as I asked in my last hour, and I repeat again, give me one secular reason to outlaw, to make illegal public nudity. Give me one secular reason. You cannot. There is none. The reason for the ban is the belief that it is undignified for humans to expose their private parts to the public. But if all we are is animals, why not? Nobody, not even religious lunatics, wants to cover animal genitalia. But why then human? Why? If we're just animals, equal to animals, just another animal, as the atheist would indeed and must indeed argue, there's no special value to the human DNA, then there is no human dignity. Human dignity rests upon being created in God's image. And number three, hope. Obviously, what hope is there if we just live and die and that's it? There's no hope. Hope for what? You can have hope within your lifetime, but that's it, which is just, you know, infinitesimally small given the time of the universe. So he's right. What does science give? Science gives us medicine. God bless it. Absolutely. Science gives us a tremendous number of things to help the quality of our life. It explains a lot of things, but it doesn't give you freedom. It doesn't give you human dignity, and it doesn't give you hope, and it doesn't give you meaning. And you know what else it doesn't give? It doesn't give moral instruction. As far as science is concerned, survival of the fittest is just fine. Let the strongest kill the weakest. I will take your calls. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. Hello, my friends. This is the Ultimate Issues Hour. The first half hour of this hour, I had the Chief Rabbi of the United Kingdom on, Jonathan Sacks, a brilliant man, and his book, The Great Partnership. It's about science and religion. And I have to tell you, there are arguments against God's existence. The most powerful one, in my opinion, is the existence of terrible, unjust suffering in a world that God created. And I understand that. I've never understood science as an argument against God. Science doesn't explain why we got here. Science doesn't explain why there is a here, here. Here, here. Here, here. Yes, indeed. As I said earlier, atheists use science for atheist arguments, but science does not provide an atheist argument. All right, let's go to your calls here. Rice, Virginia. I looked up Rice. You are really out of it.
Yeah, hang on.
Hello, Mark.
Yes. Hi, Dennis.
How far are you from Richmond?
I'm about 65 miles southwest of Richmond.
Yep. All right, what's on your mind?
Well, I just pose a question or a comment with regards to Genesis. The writer in the beginning of Genesis talks about, I don't have it in front of me, but the earth being void and in the darkness, and then the earth and the universe seem to be separate. You know, I hear some religious folks speaking of the 6 days and the 7 days, you know, being literal, and they seem to blur the lines between the universe and the earth. I just wondered what your comments were on that.
Well, the reading is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So the question is, the heavens the whole universe, or is the heavens specific to just our solar system? I don't know, and I frankly don't think it matters. It's a distinction without a meaningful difference, in my opinion. So, but your question is a valid one. I don't know if it refers to the whole universe. Then you get the stars created. Well, the stars clearly are not earthbound, so it discusses creation beyond just the earth. So I would have to say that the heavens probably encompass the universe as best as one could understand that concept 3,000 years ago.
Correct. I agree with that. And I think I'm going to have to let you go to listen to your continued comments to get off the phone. But my issue is that with regarding the earth and the universe, they are separate in that it seems as though when we get to talking about a finite time of days concerning God, whether they be 1,000 years, as Peter tends to allude to or not, as that the earth and the universe are obviously of separate ages. So anyway,
yeah,
I'll listen to your comments.
Okay, I don't think that is implied. That is, I know this really well. I know it in the original Hebrew. I don't think it's implied there. But I thank you indeed, Rabbi Daniel in Cleveland. Hi, Dennis Prager.
Hi, Dennis. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm a big fan of your show and also of Rabbi Sachs. And just to comment, I'm an Orthodox rabbi as well, and I teach college students and young adults, and this question of the age of the universe often comes up, and I'm also in agreement with the fact that science has it right, the universe is billions of years old, and there's a source that really talks about it that's in presentable English by Dr. Gerald Schroeder called Genesis and the Big Bang. I know you've quoted him before in the past.
Not only that, but I just to give you an idea how well-known it is, a caller from New York on another line is making reference to the exact same book. And you're right. I've had him on, and it is a very important book. Correct.
I know him personally. I've had him speak for my groups on trips to Israel. He's a well-qualified physicist, and he brings it down with four traditional Jewish sources in science and shows that the 6 days of creation fits into the 15 billion years, science says. And just another point in terms of time, the way we measure time. First of all, you're right. It really doesn't matter. 6 days, you know, 6 million years, it doesn't really matter. We start counting in Judaism. Our calendar begins with the creation of Adam, the first human being with the soul, because humanity is what it's all about. This is why God created the world, for us to be here and to create a moral universe. And going to, if you look at the Torah, it tells us from the time of the creation of Adam until the death of Moses is 2,488 years. And we're now in the year 5773, and that's the way we count our times. What happened before that, before Adam, ultimately really doesn't matter, since the world was created really for humanity.
I think that's beautiful. Send me an email. I'd love to know who exactly I was talking with. I think that's really well said. Let's go to Littleton, Colorado, and Rick. Hello, Rick. Dennis Prager.
Hi, Dennis. I'm a big fan of yours.
Thank you.
Just to let you know where I come from, I'm an arch conservative, but I'm also a bit of an agnostic. I was raised by Christian parents, and I love the Christmas story and the story about the baby Jesus and all of that. But I've just never been able to buy into the concept that there's someone up there flicking the switches and making things happen the way they do. And that's often brought me into conflict with you specifically, because I admire so much a lot of what you say. And yet I think I've heard you say that without a belief in God, one can't be a conservative.
Oh, God, I never said that. But I want you to stay on and tell me how you heard that, because it's very important to me. I think that, well, I'll explain as soon as we come back. You're listening to The Dennis Prager Show.
If you found the reason to live on and not to die, you are a lucky man. Preachers and poets and scholars don't know it. Temples and statues and steeples.
Ultimate Issues Hour, Dennis Prager. What a great hour it's been. Am I allowed to say that? I am? Good. I had the chief rabbi of Britain on the great partnership about science and religion, why they shouldn't and don't conflict. So we've been talking about that since. Now, this was so important to me, Rick in Littleton, and let me go back to you. So you think you've heard me say that in order to be a good conservative, you have to believe in God. Is that correct? Did I hear you properly?
Yeah, more or less.
Okay, so
that
all right. Only because of time, so let me then quickly tell you exactly what I believe. A conservative has to affirm what I call the American Trinity, liberty in God we trust, and e pluribus unum. A conservative can be a total atheist and know how important God-based Judeo-Christian values are to the American experiment. You can be tone deaf and know how important classical music education is for children. You don't have to personally affirm God's existence to be a conservative, but you're not a good conservative if you think that a godless America is in keeping with the American experiment.
I think I still qualify as a conservative under that definition. Where I think we might part is how can I say that in God we trust is a guiding principle for me when I'm still struggling with the existence of God.
It's not. It's a guiding principle for America.
So you're saying that the teachings of a Christian society or Judeo-Christian society that put their stake in God or their belief system is centered around God, I'm buying into their teachings and not into their God.
Yes, that's right. That's right. What you buy into personally is irrelevant almost. What you want America to buy into matters. We don't matter as much as the values of our society matter. That was a very important call. So are Joe's and Dave's and Nagy's and Pete's and Kevin's. Alaska, California, Colorado, Georgia, New York, and I wish I could take them. So let me leave you with a request, and that is that you give to the Salvation Army this Christmas season. We're a third of the way to our goal. It's the Red Kettle at DennisPrager.com. There is no conflict between science and religion. I am certain that the more you know science, the more ultimately you will say, yep, it doesn't seem to have happened by itself. Thank you for listening. I'm Dennis Prager.